All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a concept that can be kind of confusing for law students.
Yeah, it's tricky.
We're going to be looking at covenants running with the land. So this is a very important concept, especially in property law.
It is.
And, you know, for our listeners out there who may not be super familiar with this concept, what we're really talking about here is promises or obligations tied to land ownership.
Yeah, and the thing about them is that they can actually bind future owners of the property. So it's not like a regular contract between two people. It's something that actually sticks with the land itself.
Right. So it's different from a personal obligation that you might have, like a debt, which wouldn't automatically transfer to someone else if you sold your property, for example.
That's a great way to put it. It's more like, imagine if you promise your neighbor that you'll always maintain the fence between your properties.
Right.
And then you sell your house. And then that new owner is also bound by that promise because it's attached to the land, not just the individual people.
That's a good example. So, you know, today we're going to try to clarify when a contractual obligation actually becomes a covenant that runs with the land using a really interesting case.
Absolutely. It's called Bremeyer Excavating v. McKenna. And it really highlights the complexity of this concept.
It does. And it also gives us a framework for understanding how courts decide whether or not a promise will actually stick with the land and bind future owners.
Right. And there's a specific 5-part test that courts use to figure this out.
So that's what we're going to unpack today. So the case of Bremeyer Excavating v. McKenna, it's sort of a legal whodunit.
It is, kind of.
Did the contract in this case create a covenant running with the land? In other words, did the promise made in the beginning actually become the responsibility of the new owners?
That's a big question.
So let's dive into the backstory first, lay out the facts of the case. Tell me about the original agreement. What happened there?
Sure. So back in 1980, we have Bremeyer Excavating, Inc., and they made an agreement with Gerald Parks. It was a written contract. And a key part of this agreement was that Bremeyer Excavating got this exclusive option to do any fill work and put in utilities on Parks' property.
Oh, interesting. So what do you mean by fill work?
Like, you know, bringing in dirt or other materials to level out the land.
Got it. Like for construction or landscaping.
Exactly. But there was a catch. They had to match the lowest bid if Parks got other offers for the work.
So they had like a right of first refusal, but they had to be competitive on price. Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
So what happened next? Did Bremeyer get to do the work?
Well, that's where things get interesting. Parks ended up selling his property. The new owners were John McKenna and John Pietramonico. And they decided to hire someone else to do the fill work.
Ah, so that's where the conflict arises.
Exactly. Bremeyer said, hey, wait a minute. We had this agreement with Parks. You bought the property, so you're bound by that promise too.
They probably felt like they got the rug pulled out from under them.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that's what led to the lawsuit, right?
That's right. Bremeyer sued McKenna and Pietramonico for breaching the contract.
They felt like that exclusive option to do the fill work should have transferred to the new owners along with the property.
Exactly.
So how did the lower court rule on this?
The trial court actually sided with McKenna and Pietramonico. They granted summary judgment, which basically means they said Bremeyer didn't have a strong enough case to even go to trial.
Wow. Okay. So Bremeyer wasn't happy with that, obviously.
Of course not. They appealed the decision to the Washington State Court of Appeals.
And what arguments did they make in the appeal?
Their main argument was that the contract they had with Parks created this special kind of promise, a covenant that ran with the land.
So it would be like a permanent fixture of the property passing from owner to owner.
Precisely. They said it was more than just a regular contract between two individuals. It was something that should affect whoever owned that land.
Okay, so that brings us to the heart of the matter. What did the appeals court say? Did they agree that this was a covenant running with the land?
Well, they really had to break down the whole concept. They looked at each part of the test used to decide if a promise is a covenant running with the land.
And remind me, what are those elements of the test again?
Sure. First, the covenant has to be enforceable. Like, a court would have to be able to make someone do what it says.
It can't be something illegal or impossible. Okay, that makes sense. What else?
Second, it has to touch and concern the land. That's a key one.
I've heard that phrase before, but it's always a bit fuzzy. What does it actually mean for something to touch and concern the land?
Basically, it means that the promise or the obligation has to be directly related to the land itself. It can't just be some random personal agreement. It needs to affect the land's use, its value, or the enjoyment that someone gets from owning it.
So, like, Promising to mow your neighbor's lawn every week would probably not touch and concern the land, but promising to always allow them access to a shared driveway would?
Exactly. The driveway directly affects both properties.
Okay, that makes more sense. What are the other elements of the test?
Well, the third one is intent. The original parties have to have intended for the promise to bind future owners.
So if they just made a casual agreement that wasn't meant to last beyond their ownership, it wouldn't qualify.
Right. And then there are two types of privity.
Privity. Okay, that's another word that always throws me off.
It just means a certain kind of legal relationship. So there's horizontal privity, which refers to the relationship between the original parties when they made the agreement.
So were they buyer and seller, landlord and tenant, something like that?
Right. There has to be some connection to the land itself.
And then there's vertical privity.
Right. That's the relationship between the original party to the covenant and whoever ends up owning the land later.
So like the chain of ownership down the line. Okay. So those are the five elements.
They are. And in the Bremeyer case, the court really focused on two of these elements.
Which ones?
Touch and concern and horizontal privity.
So let's start with touch and concern. Why didn't the court think that the agreement between Bremeyer and Parks touched and concerned the land?
Well, they looked at the nature of the promise. Hmm. It was basically about Parks choosing Bremeyer as his contractor for fill work. And the court said that was more of a personal preference.
Yeah, like hiring a particular painter or plumber, it's not inherently tied to the property itself.
Right. They said it didn't affect the land's value, its use, or the enjoyment of the land in a direct way.
I see. So even though the work would happen on the land, the agreement itself was more about a business relationship.
Exactly. And the court compared it to something like a right of first refusal.
Which is?
Like, imagine you want to buy your neighbor's house.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, but if I ever decide to sell, I have to give you the first chance to buy it.
I see. So you have the right to refuse or accept the offer before they can sell it to anyone else.
Yeah, but the court said that kind of agreement is generally considered a personal right, not something that runs with the land.
So they saw the Bremeyer agreement as being similar, a preferential right, but not directly tied to the land itself.
Right. And that leads us to the second issue, horizontal privity.
Remind me again what that means.
It's about the relationship between the original parties when they made the covenant.
Like if they were buying or selling the property from each other at the same time they made the agreement.
Exactly. And in this case, the court said there wasn't horizontal privity because Bremeyer and Parks didn't have that kind of shared interest in the land.
They were just in a service contract. Parks owned the land and Bremeyer was just a potential contractor.
Right. And that wasn't enough to create horizontal privity, according to the court.
Interesting. So even if they had written in the contract that they intended for this agreement to bind future owners,
it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
Because the nature of the promise itself wasn't connected to the land in the right way, and their relationship didn't meet the legal requirements.
So what are the key takeaways here for our listeners, especially law students who are learning about property law?
I think the biggest lesson is that you can't just assume that any agreement about land will automatically run with the land.
It has to meet those specific legal tests.
Exactly. And if you're drafting a contract or trying to figure out if a promise will bind future owners, you really need to pay attention to those five elements.
Especially touch and concern and the privity requirements.
Right. And you have to be very clear about the nature of the obligation and how it relates to the land itself.
So give me an example of a covenant that probably would meet these requirements.
Sure. Let's say you're buying a house in a planned community with a homeowners association.
Okay, like a subdivision.
Right. And in the HOA agreement, it says that all homeowners have to pay dues to maintain the common areas.
Like the parks and the swimming pool, things like that.
Exactly. That kind of promise would probably touch and concern the land because it directly affects the value and enjoyment of all the properties in the community.
And there would probably be horizontal privity because the HOA agreement is usually part of the process of buying the property.
Right. So that's a good example of a covenant that would likely run with the land.
Okay, that really helps clarify things.
It also shows how important it is to draft these agreements carefully.
So it sounds like the Bremeyer case was a good reminder that the law tries to protect future property owners from being unfairly burdened by agreements they weren't part of.
Absolutely. It's about balancing the freedom to make contracts with the need for clear and predictable rules about property ownership.
It's a delicate balance.
It is.
So before we wrap up, I have one more question for our listeners to ponder. How do you think the Brennmeyer case might have turned out differently if, instead of just a contract, Parks had granted Brennmeyer an easement for the fill work?
That's a good one.
An easement is like a legal right to use someone else's property for specific purpose, right?
Right. So maybe Parks could have granted Brennmeyer an easement to access the land for 5 years to do any necessary fill work.
Interesting. So that would have created a different kind of property interest.
It would have. And it might have affected how the court analyzed the touch and concern and privity issues.
Yeah, it would have given Brennmeyer a more direct legal connection to the land itself.
Right. So that's something to think about. How do different types of property interests affect whether a covenant will run with the land?
That's a great question to consider as you delve deeper into property law.
Definitely. And I encourage everyone to think about how these concepts might apply in real-world situations. Because this stuff comes up all the time in real estate transactions, development projects, and even just everyday neighbor disputes.
It's everywhere. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Deep Dive. We hope you found this discussion helpful and thought-provoking. And we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of law.